My name is Sonia Lorenz. In the early and middle stages of life, we don't usually experience death on a frequent basis. But if we talk about death during those times when we're not experiencing it, we can gain the understanding that we need to confront it confidently when we do experience death. My most meaningful early experience with death occurred when I was around 12-ish years old. It was my grandmother. She died. And in this event, there were three main moments that were very sobering for me. First, she died in a hospital. Now, I wanted to go see her, and so I asked my mom, and my mom very wisely said, "I'm sorry, this isn't a good idea." She explained that Grandma was very, very sick, and that she had tubes hooked up to her, and that Granny did not want me to remember her like that. And I understood it. These facts made very good sense to me. What didn't make sense is when we went to see her in the funeral home at the wake, she did not look sick. She did not have tubes hooked up to her. In fact, she looked healthy. More than that, she looked better than she'd looked in years. And then as I looked at her more and more, I could have swore I saw her breathe. I did see her breathe. This she is not dead. All the adults have made a mistake. My grandmother is alive, and now the adults are going to bury her alive. This is the inner workings of my 12-year-old brain. So what I got into my head is I need to touch her. I need to touch her to make sure that she's dead so the adults don't make this terrible mistake. But I couldn't because I was scared. Has anybody seen Stand By Me or read the Stephen King book, Stand By Me? You know, four kids, they go on an adventure to touch a dead body and ultimately they're too scared to do it. It's just like that, except for without the Stephen Kingy parts. I was too scared. So in that moment of fear, I started feeling guilty. This is my second sobering moment. I felt guilty. I felt guilty that I wouldn't touch her. And then the real guilt started coming up, because that's not really what I felt guilty about. What I really felt guilty about was a few years ago, I wrote this essay called My Favorite Older Person, and it was about my grandfather. Everyone knew that Pa was my favorite older person, and Granny knew that she was not my favorite older person. Not only that, but it was actually documented. My teacher submitted it to a contest, and I won first place, and then Pa and I, we got our pictures on the front page of the newspaper. It was well documented. Everybody knew I liked Pa better. So I felt guilty because now my grandmother has died knowing that I don't like her best, and I can't even work up the gumption to touch her and make sure that the adults aren't making this terrible mistake. So I go to my mother. Now, just for awareness, Granny really was dead. This is all the inner workings of a 12-year-old brain. I go to my mom and I'm like, "Mom, she's not dead." And my mom tells me, "Sonia, she really is dead. She's been embalmed. There's no possible way she could be alive." But see, I didn't understand what embalming meant. So I went to the only logical conclusion that a 12-year-old child can come to. My mother is obviously wrong. So then we get to the third and final sobering moment of this experience for me. It occurred at the cemetery. Now, I had it worked up in my brain that this was supposed to go down just like the movies. We were supposed to stay, we'll listen to a few words, we will see the casket lowered into the ground, and then we will all help cover it, because this is what happens in the movies. This is not what happens in reality. We stayed, we listened to some boring preacher forever, and then we left. So I go up to my mom, who, by the way, by this time, she's grieving. She loved my granny. And she has been dealing with questions that don't make any sense from her daughter all day long. And I say, "Mom, this is wrong. I really want to stay. I want to see it lowered into the ground. I want to help cover it with dirt." And she says, "Sonia, that would be too hard." And before I can get out my very well-planned argument about how I am fully capable of pitching dirt anywhere, and I have done that many times in my life, my mom ushers me out and we leave. I didn't even get to make my argument. So looking back at my 12-year-old brain, what I look at is I see someone who actually really just wanted to be physically involved in the process. I needed to physically understand what was going on. I can't say that would be the same for every 12-year-old. I can say that was true for me. I wanted to be physically involved with the interdependent web of life, and death is a part of that web, and I needed to understand it. Now, let's be fair, don't judge Mom away too harshly. In this event, it was actually a really wonderful celebration of my grandmother's life. All the cousins piled into one house, which I love my cousins. We had so much food, half of it spoiled. I had no less than 3 flats of strawberries, which in Florida, that's a big deal. I love my strawberries. So it was a wonderful, loving event. And Mom did what she was supposed to do. She answered my questions. Remember, she answered the question about, can I go see Granny? She answered that really well. But she had an advantage there. See, my mother, she was a really excellent caregiver. In fact, she's such an excellent caregiver that both me and my brother understand the process so well that we will be excellent caregivers one day. But death isn't something that my mother encountered on a regular basis, so she didn't know how to answer my questions. It was completely unknown territory, and that's where we started breaking down because we hadn't talked about it. Now let's fast forward 20 years. I haven't really changed that much. Still like my facts, still like researching, but now I'm a librarian. Now I have endless resources that I can draw from. I have read books. I have talked to subject matter experts. I have watched my documentaries. I know lots of stuff now. And now I'm passionate about it, and now I enjoy it. And I think this is a subject that provides such peace for me. So I go to a new job at work, and we have a mixer. Now, this office has about 50 people in it, and they break us off into groups of about 3 or 4, and we're supposed to say our name and something interesting that no one else knows about us. So I think it would be hilarious to say, hello, my name is Sonia Lorenz. I can tell you everything you never wanted to know about death, dying, and body disposition. I think this is hilarious. I still think it's hilarious, but it really fell flat. They did not find it nearly as funny as I did. What made it worse is, in true government style, everyone had to elect a speaker and then do a readout to the entire group of 50 people. So poor Kathleen gets up and she says, yeah, I'm Kathleen, I like quilting, Joe likes cooking, and Sonia likes dead bodies. Which is totally embarrassing because no one in this office knows me, and now I like dead bodies. But what's interesting is after that, a few days later, people started coming up to me and asking me, Sonia, what's this dead body stuff you're talking about? And it turns out people really are interested in death, and they really do want to talk about death, but very much like 12-year-old Sonia, who was too scared to move, they're scared. They're scared of looking weird. They're scared of looking morbid. They're scared of asking questions, and they're scared of what answers they might find when they ask those questions. So part of my free and responsible search for truth and meaning is, of course, doing my elite research as a good librarian, but it's also being the weird one. I can go out there and I can be weird so you don't have to. In the early and middle stages of life, we really don't have a lot of experience with death. It happens infrequently for us. But if we talk about it now, we can gain the confidence and understanding so that when it does happen, we can confront it wholly, as whole people. So, are you curious about the stages that a dead body might go through? Come sit by me. I already know. I already researched it. Are you looking for alternative or green burial options? There are tons. So many you wouldn't even imagine. So many options that you wouldn't imagine. As good you use. I mean, come on, green burial options. Did you have an experience where you were with a loved one when they died? And in that moment when they died, their mouth gently fell open. And you wondered, why did that happen? Ask me. That happened. That same thing happened to me, and I wondered, and I found the answers. So don't worry. We can have a conversation. I'm already the weird one, so you're safe.
Woody Allen. You all know Woody Allen, right? His take on death. I don't mind dying. I just don't want to be there when it happens. My Aunt Garnet was dying. At 86, she had a terminal lung disease and heart failure. As she lay on the couch of her daughter, who lived next door, she saw one of her grandsons come through the front door and go toward the kitchen. She called out, "Christopher, am I dead yet?" He answered, "No, Grandma. Why do you think that?" And he said, she said, "People have been coming through the house all day with casseroles, and I thought maybe I had died." Aunt Garnet, a retired grade school principal, had lived a full life, was at home with her children, her grandchildren, and her church. She was at peace with dying. The topic of our service this morning, If I Die, comes to you courtesy of my mother, who is 96 and living in assisted living in Kentucky. The week before she turned 94, she had a serious heart incident and passed out at home. The doctors told her she couldn't live alone anymore. In searching through her papers to find where she could afford to live, I found a small cut-up piece of paper with the words across the top underlined, "If I die." She then proceeded with instructions for her service in case she did die, where she wanted her service, who she wanted to sing, where it was supposed to be held, what parts they were supposed to sing, and she even included a note to the minister, "Brother Deal, when you say the prayer, speak up." At the bottom, it said in big, huge letters, "I do not want to be cremated." It was the first time I ever had any idea what my mother wanted at the end of life. My mother never talked about dying. I had tried to broach the topic with her many times as she aged, to no avail. When my father died almost 20 years ago, after a long, protracted battle with cancer, it was the first time I had actually witnessed a death. It was not the horrible, terrible thing that I had always imagined. It was the end of my father's pain. It was peaceful and quiet, and although sad, it was free. Afterwards, walking out of the hospital, my mom said to me, "What happened?" "They told me he was going to be back on his tractor this summer." You see, the doctors could never get my dad or my mom to talk about how serious his situation was, or hospice, or what to do about resuscitation, or what treatment to use. They knew my dad was too afraid of dying, so they kept telling him, "He's going to be fine, and you'll be back on your tractor in the summer." My father was not at peace with dying. I believed at the time that part of my parents' reluctance to speak about death was generational, but something happened recently that surprised me. Some friends that live in Florida were visiting, and somehow it came up that I was part of the Memorial Society of Northern Virginia. Our friend asked what the society did, and I told him part of what we did was dissemination of end-of-life information. He looked at me, and he said, "Why would you want to do that? That's so morbid." Okay, folks, that's my generation. So I think it's time to talk about death. Like the old adage, a problem shared is a problem halved, I believe that talking about dying is one of the ways to make it more comfortable and more accepting. Dying is part of living. From the moment we are born, we start the process of dying. Sogol Rinpa wrote, "We are terrified of letting go, terrified, in fact, of living at all, since learning to live is learning to let go." And this is the tragedy and the irony of our struggle, to hold on. Not only is it impossible, but it brings us the very pain that we are seeking to avoid. Hank Dunn, in his book, Hard Choices for Loving People, spoke about a man struggling with AIDS. The man told him, "I have finally learned the difference between giving up and letting go." Hank says the truth is that we all will die whether we give up or we let go. We are making a choice about the nature of our dying or the dying of the one we love. We die in trust and grace or in fear and struggle. I have a friend who had gone through breast cancer and 5 years later diagnosed with abdominal cancer. When the second cancer came, I was amazed at how she did not dwell on it, but talked about it matter-of-factly, without panic or reserve, and continued to live her life with her usual zest and total involvement. When I asked her how she could maintain that kind of attitude with the diagnosis she had, she simply said, "Why should death be any different than life? We embrace life. Why shouldn't we embrace death with the same amount of equanimity?" We can choose to look death in the eye, be creative and connected, embrace and accept the fact that it is the end of life as we know it now. That doesn't mean there won't be pain and anguish at leaving our loved ones and our friends. It just means that with acceptance, we are allowed to be more in charge of our own death, and by default, make it easier for us and all those around us. Death is inevitable. The reason we die is not usually a choice. The dignity with which we die should be a choice.